Well, she waited up for me to get home, so that was a good thing. But it was one of the first games she's missed and didn't go to since we've been here. I think it is the first game, actually. And so, you know, she says she can see what's happened a lot better on TV. So I got coached up quite a bit when I got home.
Two more from the start to the back.
I don't know how how you going to deal with not having your phone. you know, you're of that generation, you know, that I gotta have it. You know, I think practice, you know, the one thing that you can do in practice and get away with is not have to play with the right time clock, to use your terminology, in terms of the rush is not going to be as quick. You can hold the ball, you can try to figure things out, but then in a game that all changes. So I think to create circumstances in practice where, you know, you have to get the ball out on time and you're constantly talking about getting the ball out on time, I think that's really, really important. You know, for guys to develop that sense of time clock, that, and it's the timing of the play. You know, sometimes when you hold the ball, the play's open for a second, then it closes. So you got to throw the ball on time. That's very, very important. And we got to keep working on that. Yeah, well, we practice it all week. Discipline and eye control is one of the most important things in playing football. And like everybody grows up watching the ball. I've talked about this before. So that's how you watch a game. But when you're playing a game, you have specific keys and things to look at. Like if the guard pulls, it doesn't matter which way the back goes. Your key says go this way. When they run a slider, you got to know when you got to fall back and when you don't. All right. So, you know, we just got to keep working and working and working on those things so that I think communication, you know, helps that. And you know, we're constantly on the secondary to communicate, because if they communicate, it makes it easier for the linebackers to know what, how and when and what they're supposed to do. So, you know, Jihad makes a lot of plays and he's developing nicely at the position. But experience is going to be critical for him to continue to grow and develop. All right, thank you.
Nick Saban, that was him yesterday with his weekly news conference addressing the media post a big victory over Mississippi State and going into A&M. It's Matt Coulter, Lars Anderson, Justin Jones. There were a couple of those quotes that I wanted to address, Lars. But first of all, you had a little time off. Maybe you took Charlotte, little puppy, to the lake or whatever. You know, I'm just kidding. But we all know why. It's because you're in Burrow distress.
Yes. Joe Burrow is clearly not 100% for the Bengals, who are obviously my team. And, man, I'll just be very brief here. He suffered a calf strain first day of training camp, and everyone who I talked to didn't think it was going to be that significant of an injury. It's turned out to be very significant because, one, part of Joe Burrow's game is his maneuverability in the pocket, creating plays off script. And that's a huge aspect of his game, just like any quarterback. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, if he can't run, he's not Patrick Mahomes. And Joe Burrow right now is not Joe Burrow. So one, he can't move in the pocket. Two, he is afraid to really thrust that right foot into the ground when he is throwing. Right? A right-hander, when you're throwing the ball, your back foot is your plant foot, and all of your velocity, or a great part of your velocity, is generated from that right calf muscle. And Joe just simply won't do that. He's leaning forward as he throws, And so he doesn't have much velocity, and he's, this causes his throws to sail. So another one of his hallmarks is his accuracy, and he's just not right. So he can't run and he can't throw, and he's a sitting duck back there. You should see some of the alignments that the Tennessee Titans. It was amazing. Matt, I've never seen anything like it. They didn't have anybody over the center or each guard. And when Joe was in shotgun and empty backfield. So they didn't have anybody over the center or the guard, and their defensive ends were to the outside of the tackles because they knew Burrow was not going to be able to run up the he couldn't run straight. I mean, if he could have ran, he could have, like, you know, gone for 30 yards, but he can't run, and defenses know that, and so they just put everybody on the outside and collapse the pocket, and so he got absolutely brutalized against the Titans. You know, I'm a huge Zach Taylor fan. You know, he's a Nebraska guy like me, but you know, I don't think he should be playing. He's just, if you can't protect yourself, you shouldn't be playing. He clearly cannot protect himself.
More on the Bengals Network as we get back to Alabama and talking about one of the things I wanted to bring up and why we ran those quotes. It's fine. I know if anybody listens to this show than more than 10 or 15 minutes and doesn't know what a big Bengals guy and Nebraska guy you are and a volleyball guy, then they're probably honestly listening elsewhere. But no, there's your update on Joe Burrow. Now,
hey, you asked.
I asked kiddingly. And then you also said, let me give you a brief update. And 4 minutes later, we're back to talking to Alabama. Okay. All right. All that aside, one of the things that Nick continues to be asked about are snap problems. Lars, go into detail here, please. Tell me, what's the problem? These guys have been playing this position, I'm assuming, most of their lives. Nobody operates under center anymore unless you're Navy or Army. How come teams, and let me tell you, let me really, really tell you, Alabama's not the only one that has this problem. It seems like a pretty simple movement. Why is it suddenly more visible and they're having bigger issues with it? Have the defenses figured something out? How would that be?
Well, remember when Chuck Knobloch, the second baseman for the Yankees, couldn't make the throw from second to first? I mean, I think it's mental. Like, you know, Alabama, early in Nick Saban's tenure, they would recruit the best kickers in the country. They get to Alabama, and Nick Saban's watching them, and what happens? Can't hit a 30-yard kick. I mean, I think there's something, you know, it's the stress of wanting to be perfect, right? And you know, it just happens in sports. I mean, I don't really know. I don't have a great explanation. Do you?
No. Are they lining up on the center differently? I don't think so. I mean, no. If that were the case, wouldn't they have been doing it, you know, 15 years ago when they first started using it? I guess it is a mental thing, but at what point do you stop letting it be one guy's mental problem and then let another guy try? Alabama's got to have a backup, and all these other schools that are having issues, they seem to stick with the same. Maybe that's my question. Why aren't they swapping a snapper?
Yeah, it was amazing that, yeah, I mean, Seth McLaughlin, he's a really good player, I think, but another bad snap against Mississippi State. And hey, it's a tough environment there. I still don't understand how those cowbells are legal. I really don't. I don't get it.
You should have heard me and Justin yesterday.
Yeah. What was your...
Yeah. It's got to go.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like. Actually, I've been there, but they weren't playing Alabama. I think Mississippi State was playing a UAB when I went over there. It was loud. It was obnoxious. But when you're playing Alabama and you're on national TV, my biggest issue with it now is when you're watching the TV game and the opposing team gets to the line, in this case Alabama, on a third down situation, they start in unison with those bells, and it spikes the audio on national TV, and the announcers pop, and you can't really hear them, and it disrupts the game in the stadium and when you're watching it. And, hey, Commissioner Sankey, love you. You are the man. But it is time for the SEC to stop this, you know what?
Yeah, it's not sportsmanlike. you know, it's not fair. And look, they put the onus on the fans to not ring the cowbell when the team is at the line of scrimmage. Give me a break. I mean, the fans aren't. It's just crazy. And what are they going to do? Kick out 70,000 people with cowbells? It really bothered me. And I've been watching games at Mississippi State and Starkville for a long, long time, just like probably the vast majority of our listeners. But it seemed louder on Saturday night than usual. And also, they were not stopping when Alabama would approach the line of scrimmage, as per the mandate. But again, how are you going to police that? The only way to do it is,
and they can do that. The referee has every bit of power. If he thinks it is extended past their time to ring the bell,
I wonder what
flag that would stop it for the moment. But what they could do is just stop it altogether.
I wonder why the referee didn't warn the crowd. Like, you get one warning, and then it's a 15-yard penalty on your team. But you know, I guess that could induce Alabama fans to go into the crowd and ring the cowbells as loud as they can as the team approaches as the team's at the line of scrimmage. But I agree. The answer is no more cowbell.
All right, just quickly, think about it. What would be the equivalent if other teams could have a noise-making device? Like, if you were at LSU, could you get all those bells and whistles from Mardi Gras and let them start doing it? Maybe that's the answer. Other schools retaliate with their own noisemakers, and then the SEC has to eliminate all of them, and that way Mississippi State is not feeling picked on. Wow, what a deep dive into Cal Blank.
Go ahead.
You know what I think, though, is just more impressive? Like, Mississippi State has these cowbells, but when you talk about teams like A&M and the 12th man, or the 12th man up in Seattle, or Kansas City, that's just so much more impressive when you have the crowd using their voices to create disruption and noise. I mean, we've seen it here at Bryant Denny used plenty of times, but when the cow, it's just frustrating. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it made the game hard to watch, frankly, and I think that contributed to Alabama looking flustered early in the game. And you know what? Playing on the road in the SEC is not easy to begin with, no matter where you are. But in this type of atmosphere where you can't even hear yourself think, but it creates an environment that you can't replicate in practice. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's not fair, right? It's unsportsmanlike, and something needs to be done about it. But, hey, in the end, it didn't really affect Alabama that much. I think the fans and media members are more annoyed by it than probably the players.
You're listening to Big Noon Sports. I agree, and let's hope that this is getting back to Birmingham, Alabama, and but you know what would be cool? If Mississippi State would self... Oh, wait a minute. What am I thinking? They're not going to stop because it's a sportsmanlike thing to do. Hey, speaking of sportsmanlike, later on the show, because we got a great lineup, I want to talk to you about Storm in the Field. It happened again this time when Ole Miss managed to stave off LSU. This is a great rivalry, but it's an in-conference game. It's two ranked teams, but it's not storming the field worthy, and storming the field is somebody's going to get hurt. Little girl got clocked in the head.
I've been saying for a long time somebody's going to get killed. Well, I mean, not in that situation like we saw with the LSU player, but you can't blame the LSU player, Matt. You can't. The fan is yelling obscenities, running at him. I don't know. The video I saw, I just don't think we can go into a deep dive on this at some point, but we have been consistent, both you and I, for basketball and football. We got to somehow stop this storming of the field, because somebody's going to get really, really hurt.
Nick Kelly of the Tuscaloosa News is joining us on the other side of the break. The one and only Fox Sports Tim Brando will join us in the second hour, as will the president of the Talladega Super Speedway, Brian Crichton. And, man, that's the lineup and the pitch. And guess what? Postseason baseball starts in a couple hours, so I'll get into that, too. Braves don't play. They're not a wild card team. They'll play. They'll play the winner of Miami and Philadelphia. Please, Miami, win the series. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, brought to you by Haley Sansing, Union Home Board.
Reagan, owner of R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion in downtown Tuscaloosa, located at 2703 6th Street across from the Home 2 Suites. Come down to R&R and see why we're the ultimate cigar and bourbon experience. With over 165 bourbons and 5 private barrels, our selection of bourbon is unmatched. We have the best cocktails around and our cigar selection is legendary. Our lounge and service are world-class. Come and experience the luxury of the mansion and see why it's a world-renowned cigar and spirits destination.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A very warm afternoon. The sky mostly sunny, the high at 89. Clear tonight, the low 61. And the weather stays warm and dry tomorrow and Thursday. A good supply of sunshine both days. Highs between 86 and 89 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 82 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Tide interviews brought to you by the Bama broker, Laura Lee Thompson. And we appreciate her contributions and the Advantage Realty Group as well. 802 is your code number this hour. Go to the Tide app, 100.9. Our guest from the Tuscaloosa News is Nick Kelly. Nick, appreciate you taking a moment to join us really quick, or not really quick. Tell us how you are.
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
It's great. And we were just into a lengthy conversation about cowbells. Is it time for the SEC to step in and do something about it? Because not only is it difficult in the stadium, but, Nick, I know you were there, but I was trying to watch it on television, and it was very disruptive to the audio of the broadcast. What do you think?
Well, I'll say we do not need more cowbell. I'll start with that. We might need less. I tweeted that like when we were there 2 years ago, and I got a bunch of angry Mississippi State fans in my mentions. Like, it's a fun tradition, so I don't want to knock that because it is fun. But it's probably not reined in enough because, yeah, it's very loud. It's obnoxious, especially during moments where it shouldn't be like that. Because, you know, they talk about the cutoff of I forget the exact cutoff time, but, you know, they have the parameters, so to speak, but it's not really followed that closely. So I think more action needs to happen, and maybe it's something that if you can somehow find a more serious consequence for it, I don't know what that looks like, but, yeah, I think it could be reined in a bit.
What are just your big sort of takeaways from the game on Saturday night? And maybe start with Jalen Milroe and his play and development moving forward.
Well, I think it was his best game. And now he didn't have to pass a ton, but I still think you can call it his best game. I mean, his accuracy was, I think, 83% was his completion percentage. So he looked more comfortable in the intermediate throws, which is a big area for improvement for him. An area he needs to improve in. And then he also, I mean, of course, running the football, he was just dominant, which is nothing that we didn't know he couldn't do, but it still is fun to see. I mean, when that guy takes off, there were literally two defensive backs, I believe, standing way far ahead of him. They could have gotten him if they wanted, but he ran right by him. He split him. And that's that's not easy to do. I mean, he's just a phenomenal athlete. I think we know that. We knew that, but that game reminded us of that. But as a passer, I think he showed some signs of improvement. And it's, you know, obviously he's not a Bryce Young. It's going to take him a little bit more time. But slowly but surely, he's getting better. So we'll see if – and also he had no turnovers. And so that was big. And so we'll see if that can continue this week against A&M, which I think will be tough. But I think a lot to be encouraged by Jalen in that win over Mississippi State. Now he's just got to keep stacking good performances.
The offensive line has just gotten better and better at just dominating the line of scrimmage, especially since the Texas game. But there's one single issue that continues to pop up: bad snaps. How do you stop that? How do you evaluate it? Is it a mental thing?
I mean, it's a great question, and if I had the answer, I'd probably be working in that building and helping the center. But because I don't think Nick Saban has the answer at this point. It might be mental to an extent. It might be similar to kicking a little bit. I mean, I'm going to call on not the same thing whatsoever, but back in my high school football playing days, I played some center, and yeah, when you can't snap, like, it gets to you mentally. I remember I had a few issues early on in like ninth grade where I couldn't get a good shotgun snap down or an accurate one, and it messes with you because then you're worried about that. You don't block as well. It gets worse and worse, and so I'm sure some of that's going on with Seth right now. Again, I don't want to pretend like I played center at the college level, but just my limited experience, like, yeah, the mental aspect can certainly play a role. Maybe it's similar to kicking that way, where obviously guys can do it. Because that's the thing. This isn't Seth's first time playing Power 5 Division 1 football. I mean, he's an experienced center, and he's proven he can do it well. And snaps have not been an issue until this year. So if it's partly mental, maybe there's some of that. I mean, it's hard to know just the different injuries or bumps and bruises that pop up during the year that could affect things. I mean, it could be a variety of things, but I think they're trying to just be confident with them and just stick with them and help them kind of push through it. So, but yeah, it hasn't cost them big time yet, but if you're in a close game, like I expect this week's game to be against A&M, you can't afford mistakes like that because, okay, yeah, if you have what happened in this past game where it cost you a third down opportunity, that's the best case scenario. Worst case, you turn it over. And I should say, well, actually, best case scenario is you do what they did against Middle Tennessee and they scored a touchdown. But essentially, like, if you have a bad snap and you can't make a play of it, best case scenario is that you don't turn it over. But they might turn it over if it keeps up. And so whatever the answer is, I don't know that it's super clear to me, and I don't know that it's super clear to them, but they're trying to stick with Seth and remain confident in him because I'm sure some of it is mental. And them giving him votes of confidence, I think, is important in that.
Nick, what was your evaluation of the Tommy Rees, who's offensive coordinator, and the play calling, and just sort of a big picture, like how the play calling has evolved from game one to where we are now?
Well, quarterback runs have been involved more, and that's, I think, pretty easy to spot. And I think it's been smart because that gives you an advantage in the run game. I mean, forget Jalen Milroe. Forget that he's a fantastic runner and that he'll run guys over and all those things. If they had a guy who wasn't that good of a runner but could move a little bit, I think it's still worthwhile to involve more quarterback runs, as Tommy has, because it gives you an extra blocker. And in the numbers game and run to rush defense, if they have an advantage against you in numbers, like, that's difficult. Because a lot of times you have to hope that the running back beats the one defender that you can't account for in a blocking scheme. So by having the quarterback run, that gives you a blocker and so that essentially frees you up. So I think that's been really smart. As far as other play calling, to be honest with you, there's part of me that isn't elite enough of football mind to truly break it down for you. But I do think that they're spreading the football around. They're finding different guys in the passing game. I think in a lot of ways, when you have some of the short passing game, I think that's really important, especially when the offensive line is struggling. Also, they're finding the tight end more, which to me is huge because these tight ends are good. I mean, Amari Niblack is a mismatch, and every time he gets the football, good things happen, even with C.J. Dupree a little bit too. And so I think Tommy Rees has been looking to them more and finding more ways to get them the football. I think that needs to continue. And so a couple of good things that are happening in my mind that Tommy has adjusted well with, and I think they need to continue doing.
Does Alabama have to throw it a little bit more at Kyle Field? I don't see Alabama going through the remainder of the season, completing 10 passes and winning every game.
No, yeah, they're definitely gonna have to throw it more. Part of that, I think, was because of Mississippi State's defensive makeup. They saw an opportunity to run more, and it worked. But A&M, their rush defense is better than their passing defense. Their passing defense is pretty darn good, too. I mean, their defense as a whole is good. So you're going to have to be creative. You're going to have different ways to try to beat them. You're going to have to use certain plays to set up other plays. So, yeah, you're definitely have to pass it more, and I think we'll see that. And I think this pass game is more of a anomaly that way, just them seeing an advantage they could have against Mississippi State's defensive front by running it more.
Heading to the game this weekend in College Station, what are your – if you're Nick Saban, what's your biggest concern? Is there a certain position group? Is it, still the continued development of Jalen? What do you think is keeping Nick up at night this week?
Probably the offensive line. They look a lot better against Mississippi State, no doubt. But A&M might test that offensive line the most they've been tested so far, maybe about the same as Texas, maybe not, but it's going to be up there. This pass rush for A&M, I think I saw some stat again, I have it in front of me, but 14 sacks last two games or something crazy like that. I mean, there's the pass rush there is legit. And you combine that with an offensive line that has struggled at times with that. That's maybe not a great combo. So that could be a problem. Now, the offensive line looked better for Alabama. So that's a good sign. It's encouraging. It could be better. I mean, there's a play where I saw Caden Proctor pick up a twist really well, and he wasn't doing that early on. And so I think that there's encouraging signs there. But if there's a area that I would be concerned about, it's the offensive line against a really good pass rush that Texas A&M has. But also Jalen. I mean, he had a really good game, like we talked about, against Mississippi State in terms of taking care of the football, which is key. But this is going to be a huge stage. It's going to be a tough place to play, a better defense. And if he can avoid making mistakes, it's going to help. But obviously, he's had a turnover in all but one of his Power 5 starts. And so I think that there's reason to wonder what he's going to do. And so this game will be a very telling game of, hey, if Jalen really is improving, we'll see it. If not, then we're going to see that too. So to me, those are the two biggest areas that I'm watching going into this game.
Nick Kelly from the Tuscaloosa News is our guest. We talk tight ends, and they are an important part. And all of them can catch and run, but Nye Black, he can be somebody special. Is he breaking out as the lead receiver here? Didn't see much of Burton. You're still expecting Brooks to pop up? Or is it just going to be wide receiver by committee?
At this point, it looks like wide receiver by committee. I mean, I think Jermaine Burton's their top guy at this point just because of the deep ball threat he's been. Now, is he a true speedster like we've seen like with the Jameson Williams 2 years ago? No, but he's proven to be pretty solid on deep balls. But, yeah, I think we're not seeing these crazy big passing numbers. We probably won't see those huge numbers from one sole receiver. It's a bit of a by committee, like you said, kind of ride the hot hand. But as far as the tight ends, to me, get them the football as much as you can because they're a complete mismatch. Nye Black was great when he was targeted against Mississippi State. So keep going after them and find ways to get them open because they're going to be hard to tackle. They're going to be hard to cover. But I think you keep spreading the ball around because that's, I think, advantageous for the offense as a whole.
Nick, is there any scenario where we see Ty Simpson play in this game, or is this now a Jalen Milroe's team?
I mean, to me, this is now Jalen Milroe's team because I think if you're talking about purely based on play, I mean, the obvious scenario where we see him would be if there were an unfortunate injury to Jalen Milroe. But purely based on play, I don't think that you yank a guy unless he's just downright awful, unless he's, you know, got five turnovers in the first half or just something crazy. Because if part of why I think Coach Saban named Jalen the starter when he did is you need to give a guy a vote of confidence. I talked to a few quarterbacks a couple weeks ago, a former Tide quarterbacks a couple weeks ago, and they just told me about, like, once you get named a starter, like, you can play a bit more relaxed. You can play a little bit more free because you know that one mistake and you're not yanked. And if that's the precedent you establish with, oh, Jalen threw one interception or two interceptions and he's gone, I mean, that's everyone's going to play tight then. So that's not advantageous to you to do that. Now, if he's playing horribly, like he just can't get anything going, it's just bad, 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 then maybe. But again, I think you have to think long and hard before you do that because it establishes a precedent of, hey, if you have a mistake or two, you're going to get yanked, and I don't think that's a good thing to do for these guys who are trying to get better and trying to learn. So, I would be surprised if we saw Ty Simpson at any point. But crazier things have happened. But I think at this point, Jalen's their guy, and they're going with him.
Nick, people are now talking about this Alabama defense in the same vein as 09 and other years where Alabama just dominated on defense. And it's hard to argue. Is it one of the better ones? Is it the best in the nation? I can't really find a flaw in it.
I think it is one of the better ones, especially in recent memory. Now, I think it's somewhat unfair to measure it against defenses of all time for Saban here at Alabama, because it's just a different offensive game, and I think most of us know that. So defensive success maybe doesn't look the exact same. To me, you almost can't go based off yards anymore, because guys are going to give up yards. They're going to give up plays between, you know, the 20s, so to speak. But to me, a great defense shows up in the red zone and limits touchdowns. You might give them field goals, but if you can limit scores for 6 points, that's the big thing. And this defense is doing well at that. But you're right. There aren't a lot of weaknesses. I mean, the defensive line maybe isn't as dominant as some of those great teams they've had. But the linebacking core, there's a lot to like there. I mean, the edge rushers they have right now in Braswell and Turner are fantastic. I mean, Dallas Turner's having a season that's not far off in the neighborhood of Will Anderson. No, Will Anderson's 2021 season was essentially, if you break it down to a per game basis, was a little bit better than what Dallas Turner is doing right now. But Dallas Turner right now, statistically, is having a better season than Will Anderson did a year ago. So he's playing great. I mean, the inside linebacker play, obviously Deontay Lawson's really key. They need to get him back because he's very, very good player. But there's a lot to like about Jahad Campbell and Trez Marshall as well. And Kendrick Blackshire's look good. The secondary's, I think, fantastic. And so there's a lot to like about this defense. And if this team's going to win the West, going to make it to Atlanta, going to make it to the CFP, it's going to be riding that defense and an offense that can make plays but needs to get more consistent. So, yeah, this defense is finally living up to what we expected. Like Texas week two was a really tough test for a group that was, again, second game of the season. And Texas might very well be the best team in the country. I don't think that's completely out of the question. I mean, it's for sure, to me, top five without a doubt. But and so that was a tough offense to go against, especially game two. But this defense, I think now that it's got a few more games under its belt, more experience, I think we're really seeing what we thought this group was going to be.
Nick, I know you have to run in a second, and thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate it. Just another big picture question for you. We're a little bit more than a third of the way through the season. To you, you're covering this team day in, day out, and do such an excellent job for the Tuscaloosa News. What's your biggest surprise? What surprised you the most?
Great question. Well, first off, thanks for the kind words, but maybe the fact that the offensive line hasn't been as dominant as we really thought, because it wasn't just, okay, yeah, they were talking a big game. And obviously that was easy and fun to hear from them. But I really thought they were going to be quite solid just because of the experience you have, the size, the strength you have up front. That surprised me, but they're coming to form a little bit. So I'll go with another thing, because I think that was one of the more obvious elements. I'll go with another option. And that's, for me, the receivers. I didn't necessarily think they were going to have a group in the neighborhood of, you know, Jalen Waddle and Jerry Jeudy and that group that they had. I mean, because they've just had some insane receiver play. But I really thought that they were going to have an improved group from a season ago, and maybe it is, but not as drastically as I thought it was going to be, just because I thought everything I heard about Malik Benson coming into the season was that he could be the next electric receiver for Alabama. And he's contributed. He's made some plays. He's been solid at times. But I haven't really seen him make big plays, and that's kind of surprised me some. And I thought, you know, that group as a whole is going to be more effective than it has been. Again, it's not a bad group. It's just, I thought, hey, maybe that was the optimistic side of me that was thinking that this group was going to be, really good. But I don't think they've been quite as good as I thought they're going to be. So that's maybe surprised me a little bit so far.
One thing that surprised me as we let you roll out here is the lack of playing time for Justice Haynes. You got any insight on that?
I mean, it has surprised me a little bit too, but again, he's a freshman, and you've got some, I mean, look at Roy Dell and Jace have played quite well recently, and those senior guys, they trust. And so I think that's an element of it. I don't have a special insight as to why. I think that naturally people are thinking that it's something that Justice Haynes has done or hasn't done. But I think also we knew that running back room is stacked. Could we see more of them soon? Yeah, potentially. But you're right in that I thought we were going to see more of them early on. But then again, he's got three guys in front of him that we knew that group is talented, deep, and good overall. So, yeah, that is a little surprising, but maybe not. I don't know if there's some huge reason behind it.
Well, I don't think there is, and the point was made last week on this show that you've got two really good, as you mentioned, senior running backs, and that room gets a lot smaller when they graduate. Thank you for your time, mm-hmm. Nick. How can everybody catch up with you? You got excuse me, I was going to say Twitter. How about X?
I'm still saying Twitter, so you're all good. You can follow me on Twitter, X, at _ Nick Kelly. Check out our work in Tuscaloosa News, myself, Chase Goodbread, TuscaloosaNews.com, all kinds of content there. And we'd love to have you join us. So.
Great stuff. Thanks, Nick. Talk to you next week or maybe sooner. I don't know. All right. See you, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
All right. You bet. Nick Kelly of the T-News, as we once to call it. Now, a newspaper at your doorstep. I think T-News still does that. What if they deliver and we'll see. Hey, when we get back, got a couple other things we want to talk about. TV ratings, baseball, starting in about an hour. Hey, all is good, the neighborhood, on Big Doom Sports. Sorry about that.
Sports Talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is indeed Big Noon Sports. Presented by Haley Sensing, Union Home Mortgage. Lars, this is one of my favorite times of the year because we get the best of postseason baseball. You are smack dab in the middle of the college football season. And, of course, keeping up with the Packers and the NFL. And the Braves do not play. The Braves have home field advantage throughout the National League playoffs, okay? Let's throw that out there because they had the best record. But the Dodgers are not far behind. And this afternoon, we got ball games. You want to come over and watch some baseball, Lars? I know that's exactly what you wanted to.
Absolutely. And what you just said is why, to me, or part of the reason why, October is absolutely the greatest month of the year. And also
with
the weather, the leaves changing. I mean, it's just everything. I love October. I love October. The reason I named my one of my girls Autumn, because it's one of my favorite words in the English language and what it evokes to me, at least. And just a lot of it is what you just said. But, okay, give us a quick overview of where things stand with Major League Baseball. Like, explain it to me as if, and which as I am, I don't know much about baseball. I don't follow it as closely as you. So just a quick overview of everything. And obviously the Braves are the favorites to win this whole thing.
Well, they are. And today, wild cards are being played now. You'll play it down to four, and then you play to get to two, and then you have the NL and the ALCS. But today, you got the Rangers at Tampa. Very interested in this Texas Rangers team because, as you know, they've been in the middle of the pack and back for quite a while. So, and they also live in the shadow of the Astros. And the Astros are kind of bullies. They also cheat a lot. So if I had a team in Texas, it would not be the Astros. May I just put that bluntly? But they play at Tampa. We all remember how Tampa started the season 14-0. Then at 3:30 this afternoon, Blue Jays will be playing the Twins in Minnesota. And then tonight, you got the Marlins and the Phillies. Now, that game is significant in the National League because the winner of that one will play the Atlanta Braves in the second round of the playoffs. The Atlanta Braves, percentage-wise, baseball knowledge heads, a whole deal. They're picking the Braves to win it all. And while I would too, still scares me. And here's why. If you're a really big-time Atlanta Braves fan, you'll know this already. But Atlanta has had some issues here down the stretch. They played about 500. Now, part of that is because you kind of let off the gas and you give players time off. We understand that. But Max Fried is doubtful. We don't know his situation as far as his health is concerned. And he is an ace, along with Spencer Strider, who's really – he's become the Atlanta Braves ace. But then you got Charlie Morton, who is out for the first series. That is a dedicated, experienced postseason starter. That's a problem. And the injury bug has struck the bullpen. So, and we all know, you know this, Lars. You can have all the home runs and home run hitters in the offense. We ain't going to postseason. What wins it? It's pitching.
Pitching.
Absolutely.
In the National League, let's just keep it there. If who would you, for the Braves, if you're the manager of the Braves, who would you least like to face, either in this next round or in the championship series?
It's an easy answer. I don't want to face the Phillies. And they're playing the Marlins. And I think the Braves could have their way pretty much with the Marlins. The Phillies are unpredictable, as we found out last year in postseason. And although it's a great series, and in the last 25, 30 years, it has grown even more so, the Dodgers are a tough nut now. So I would want to avoid the Phillies and the Dodgers. But anyway, Atlanta is the highest odds on. Then below that, the Dodgers. Then you go to the American League with Baltimore, which Orioles is just one of the best stories we've had in baseball in a long time. That is a farm system built team. And they got a big time player from Alabama on that team. I believe it's Hunter Gunnarsson. And then you got the Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays, who, as I mentioned, started the season in a blaze. So there you have a little baseball update. When we get back, where are we going, Lars? You want to talk some TV ratings? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Let's talk coaching salaries.
Maybe we can do that. We know who Top Dog Big Cheese is, or at least he was yesterday. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Catch Christian and Corey Miller every weekday here on Tide 100.9.
Yes, they're talking Tuesday on the Miller's Edge. We'll break down A&M versus the Tide. Nick Saban versus another assistant. We'll take your phone calls. We'll give you keys to the game tomorrow on a Talking Tuesday on the Miller's Edge on the Tide.
Tune in 11 to noon to hear Christian and Corey Miller break down everything from college to the pros on Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A very warm afternoon, the sky mostly sunny, the high at 89. Clear tonight, the low 61. And the weather stays warm and dry tomorrow and Thursday. A good supply of sunshine both days. Highs between 86 and 89 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 83 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Man, the college football coaches make a whole lot of money, and I'm assuming that Lars is bringing this up, actually, because it's really a good topic, even in February. But there is a large article on USA Today. Is that the one you're looking at?
USA Today does this, an annual, they come out with this database of salaries for Division I head coaches. And no surprise here, this is pretty much confirmation of what we already knew, that the highest paid coach in college football is Nick Saban, with a annual compensation figure of $11.4 million. And it's just kind of interesting to go down the list. You got number next on the list is Dabo Sweeney at $10.88 million, Kirby Smart at $10.7 million, Ryan Day at $10.27 million, and then you got Mel Tucker, who was fired late last month. He earned $10.01 million, and so Mel Tucker has done quite well for himself, even though he's out of a job. And Hugh Freeze is set to make $6.5 million this year, which ranks him 20th overall. And, you know, it is important to note, though, that there are a few schools that do not have to comply with public record requests, FOIA, as it's known in journalism world. And those schools include USC, so that's Lincoln Riley, Marcus Freeman, who's at Duke, and Miami, Mario Cristobal. So I would think. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, sorry. Yep, I misspoke. And I would think that Lincoln Riley is really close to Saban, but we don't know because
one that says he's making 10. I just did one report that I just had from Google.
Yeah. So okay. So then, yeah. All right. So yeah. So then he's in the neighborhood, but he's not there. And I don't know if there's anything in Nick Saban's contract that says he has to be the highest paid coach, but he is right now, and I think deservedly so.
Lars, have you ever heard? I just thought of this question. So okay, I'll let you know that up front because I don't have an answer. It's worth discussion. Have you ever heard of a college football coach taking a pay cut as opposed to being fired or worse? Or
never, never. Uh-uh. Have you?
No.
I've never heard of an NFL coach taking a pay cut.
I'd take a pay cut and keep my job. unless I had another one. I don't think I've ever heard of any coach ever in the history of the world taking a pay cut.
Yeah, I mean, just because... Yeah. No, I haven't either. That's an interesting thought, though. Like, you know, Mel Tucker is radioactive right now. Nobody's going to touch him. But if you're somebody like Dabo Sweeney, right, the program has clearly fallen off a little bit, and he is the second highest paid coach in the United States at $10.88 million annually. They asked Dabo to take a pay cut of $1 million a year. Think he'd do it?
I don't know. You know, he might, but that would get so much publicity. That would be all anything talked about.
Yeah.
But you know, the most interesting number when it comes to Clemson's head coach, Pelham, Alabama's own, Dabo Sweeney, is zero. And that's how many players he's acquired through the transfer portal.
Yep. He's got to get with the times.
It's biting him on the
back. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And succumb to NIL and all different things we have to deal with.
Hey, if you can't adapt and evolve, just like in our industry, right, in journalism, if you can't adapt and evolve with the trends of the time, you're going to become a dinosaur. And we know what happened to the dinosaurs.
Yeah. But it took a while. And then they turned into oil. So they were still productive afterwards. All right.
Wait, dinosaurs turned into oil?
I don't know.
You got
throwing stuff out there. It's Tuesday. I'm just moving along. Hey, next hour, we got the one and only Tim Brando. Let's also talk some Talladega Racing and NASCAR. President Brian Creighton will be joining us at 1:45. So we got a full show, a full next hour, too. This is Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage.
Join Tide. It's the Tide 100.9 30K Workday Payday. Woo! Win cash every weekday 8 to 5. Here's this hour's cash code.
277. Again, that's 277. The code is 277.
Enter that code now on the Tide 100.9 app. Click on the 30K payday button and enter the code for a chance to win $30,000.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Well, she waited up for me to get home, so that was a good thing. But it was one of the first games she's missed and didn't go to since we've been here. I think it is the first game, actually. And so, you know, she says she can see what's happening a lot better on TV. So I got coached up quite a bit when I got home.
Two more from the start to back.
That's Nick Saban post-game start. Well, talking about Miss Terry, that actually was kind of a follow-up, as Nick admitted that Miss Terry said, turn them loose, and he did. And Nick got very vocal on the sidelines with a few players, and it pumped him up. But first of all, I never knew she'd not missed a game. What am I trying to say here? Miss Terry missed a football game from being there live. I've never heard of that again. And I'll say one thing immediately. Fans started saying, oh, that's a sign that he's going to retire. She's not going to the game. You know what it's a sign of? And I don't know this for a fact, but I'll make a very educated guess. Grandchildren. There's your answer. Has nothing to do with retirement. Has nothing to do with that. The kids went. She stayed with the grandparents. What do you bet that's it? She stayed with the grandkids.
Yeah. And, you know, look, it was a late game. It was a late game. The Crimson Tide, they didn't get back to Tuscaloosa until about 2 a.m. So, you know, especially, you know, if you got grandkids the next morning or that night or, you know, whatever, or you just don't feel like going.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, it is always really sweet. And again, I've witnessed this a million times, feels like, but this is an exaggeration. But Miss Terry waits at the tunnel after every game, and win, lose, no matter what happens, Nick Saban, when he jogs off the field, you know, surrounded by the troopers, he always goes to Miss Terry and a hug and a kiss and then to the locker room. I mean, it's like clockwork every single time. And, you know, I've been, you know, fortunate enough to be, you know, talking with Miss Terry or standing next to her or whatever. And you see this little scene, you know, unfold. And it makes you realize, like, we all know this, but you know, actions always speak louder, right? That they really love each other. And like, and they're a true team. And we've talked a lot about Miss Terry, and I've written about her, and she is the matriarch of the entire program. Like, she is like, she's the closer almost when it comes to recruiting, because she's the one that will look parents in the eye and say, I'll be here for your child. Anything, I'm here for your child. And, you know, she is such an asset. She is so asset to the entire program. She's so elegant. She's so sophisticated. You know, she really knows how to throw a great party. I mean, Matt, I just can't say enough good things about her. And she's always been just so generous with her time with me.
Keeps old Nick in line, too. Because he's likely been told to tone it down a few times too. But anyway, it is really a true success marriage story. It will continue. And it kind of helps when you get a 17.8 beautiful home in Jupiter, Florida. But you know what? She's earned more of it than he has.
Yeah. And what she does sort of behind the scenes too with Nick's kids and Habitat for Humanity, and you know, she is so involved in the community. Really, she's a model. She is a model. I mean, she's the thing is, when you are the wife of the Alabama coach, it's almost a, you are elevated to, you know, first lady kind of status, right? And I think Bear Bryant's wife handled that very, very well. Yeah. So I never, Matt, I obviously never met Mary Harmon, but are there parallels to be drawn between her and Miss Terry? And also, what was your interaction, or you know, did you have any interaction with Mary Harmon?
I didn't, and very few members of the media did. Very few fans did, to my knowledge. But I think the biggest parallel is that Nick Saban mentions Miss Terry often, and Coach Bryant would mention Mary Harmon and how she was his backbone too, and he would occasionally tell the story about how they met and, you know, became life mates. So I think their reference to their wives' strength is probably one parallel. And Mary Harmon was probably doing a lot of things behind the scenes, and we just didn't know about it. There was far less media avenues than there are now. But they both had marriages that were just as strong as some of the Alabama football teams we've seen.
Do you know, I know we've discussed this, but and I know most of our listeners will know this, but what movie did Nick Saban take Miss Terry to on their first date when they were in, I believe, eighth grade?
Gone with the Wind? No, I'm just kidding.
Boom, you got it.
Was it?
Yeah, well done.
Have you ever seen it?
You know, in the book. The book is so beautiful. Oh my gosh, it is just, it is obviously, it stood the test of time, man. And it, the book is just incredible. And the movie, Clark Gable, gosh, it yes, I love that movie.
It's my parents took me to that movie when I was relatively young and was really more interested in baseball practice than any movie like that. That movie had an intermission. It was very long.
Wasn't it kind of
kept the attention of an 8-year-old, you know?
Wasn't it kind of like the first blockbuster huge movie to come out of Hollywood?
I think so, and somebody will call in and correct me. But as brilliant as that movie was, it didn't win Picture of the Year. A film called How Green Was My Valley. I think I learned this in film class at the University of Alabama. But I'm going to have to look that up, and I'll do that while we call and talk to Joseph. Joseph, you are on Big Noon Sports.
How y'all guys doing, man?
Great.
Okay, this week with Texas A&M, we get a big game. It's probably one of the biggest for Alabama this year, in my opinion. I say this. First of all, I'm going to say this. Taylor Miro is the guy for the job this year. There's no doubt in my mind that he's the best guy for the job. That being said, Jalen Miro is not as good as Tua. He's not as good as Brock. Look off of safety like Tua can. He can't look off different defenders and make throws just like they can. I mean, they just done it so natural. And if people would say, well, I mean, Tua was doing this as a freshman. He came into the national championship as a freshman and was making those throws. He was looking off of safety his freshman year and made that throw to Devontae Smith. But I don't think Miro's that type of guy. I don't think he's going to be that good, to be honest with you. He wins you some games, but he won't be as good as Tua, Mac, or Bryce.
What do you expect, Joseph? I mean, look at what Tua's now. I mean, come on, man. You expect every Alabama quarterback to be like Tua or Bryce? That's totally unreasonable. Do you expect every Alabama running back to be Derrick Henry? Every linebacker to be Will Anderson? I mean, Joseph, you're a good caller, and from what I know, you're a good guy, and I appreciate that. But you kind of need a little dose of reality when you're comparing Jalen to Tua. I mean, look what Tua's on his way to taking the Dolphins to the Super Bowl. So I think we need to back off in the comparison to the last four quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, Mac Jones, he's not even a Mac Jones. I mean, Jalen Miro is not. I mean, Mac Jones did a lot better stuff than him, his first start.
There you go with the comparisons again.
How many first-round quarterbacks did Alabama have before Mac Jones? How long has Alabama been playing football?
Oh, hardly none, I'll be honest with you. But
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've been spoiled here, right? And you just can't expect that that line to keep going, especially, man, you look at Jalen Hurts, what, the third highest paid player in the NFL. Got to the Super Bowl last year, nearly won it, had a great game in the Super Bowl. Tua, he's playing at a level right now, and I know that the Dolphins lost this last weekend at Buffalo, but he's playing at a level that we haven't seen in a long time. And I know Mac Jones also not the best weekend, but you just can't expect that, right, going forward, Matt. And I know we need to break because we got to get to Tim Brando.
Brando will put us all straight, or at least he will try. Hey, you're listening to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing. We got to get to break, and then we'll get to Brando, Fox Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Very warm afternoon. The sky mostly sunny, the high at 89. Clear tonight, the low 61. And the weather stays warm and dry tomorrow and Thursday. A good supply of sunshine both days. Highs between 86 and 89 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 84 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
That guy's right. He's coming at you right now. I have to make a correction here in my cinema memory. Gone with the Wind did win the Picture of the Year from the Academy in 1939. When I was talking about how green was my valley, that was 41, and it was a surprise winner over Citizen Kane. Now, as we bring Tim Brando in, he's going, hey, what am I calling? A film critic movie? Radio station? Whatever the case. Tim, the reason is because Lars asked the question on Miss Terry and Nick Saban's first date. What did they go see? It was Gone with the Wind. Now, I'll lead to an actual question here before long, Tim. Do you know...
Well, may I throw something, something out along? Well, my wife is named Terry. And on occasion, not always, but on occasion, I do refer to her as Miss Terry, which I guess is yet another example that, like Nick, I'm of the same generation. But I'm also, and we are also, the two of us, are going to be celebrating 45 years of marriage on Saturday. And that 45th That's anniversary, awesome. By the way, will be celebrated by my being thousands of miles away in Laramie, Wyoming, while she's a Chateau Brando. So, some things never change, but we'll take care of it. It's not like we don't have plenty of time to spend together in the spring and summer, you others. But as is typically the case, we'll not be together on the actual day itself. But our youngest daughter, Tara, who is an Ole Miss grad and is married to a young man that is a plastic surgeon and is in his fifth year of residency at UMC in Jackson. She is named Tara because of my wife's love of the movie Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow.
And she and my daughter absolutely love the role of Tara, of course, that was played. And that was always her favorite movie. So as a kid growing up, so Gone with the Wind, okay, has a very strong place in the Brando household, without question.
I'm glad I asked.
I didn't think I was going to go down this road, Tim, but I got to ask, what's the key to long-term marital bliss? And really, I'm asking for myself more than anything else.
Well, in our case, it was pretty much a known factor because I knew what I wanted to do for my, for a living from the time I was about 6 or 7 years old. And that meant anybody that was going to be married to me would have to be a self-starting, motivated, independent woman, which my wife is. And I think that the time that we spent away from one another has been a catalyst for the longevity of our marriage. I think that we've always had, in fact, she jokes sometimes to people, they'll say, wow, 45 years, and she'll say, Yeah, but we've probably only actually been under the same roof 28 years, 8 months. Because if you add up all the time away, I mean, I used to work around the calendar. There was a period in the mid-90s when I was, after I had left ESPN and I went to Turner, when I was working Jefferson Pilots SEC early window game that everyone remembers there in Alabama, and especially throughout the SEC. Before I went to CBS, I was doing those games for a period of about 3 years. And during that time, I did the NBA. I did the Hawks. I did like 62 games a year, 62 of their 82. I did about 50 of the Braves games with Ernie Johnson Sr., Ernie Jr.'s dad. The games that were on Sports South that weren't on CBS, I was the broadcast partner and sidekick of Ernie Sr. And you add that to the college basketball games that I did in both the ACC and the SEC, I was barely home at all those 3 years. I mean, I was literally coming in for laundry. But that helped get me the attention necessary to get to CBS and spend 18 years there. But if you added it all up, I probably average through the nearly 40 years that I've been doing this. I started in 85 when I was at ESPN. And for a couple of years even before that, I was doing games for Raycom and Jefferson Pilot. And, of course, LSU with their Tiger Vision. So if you added it up from 85, though, when I went to ESPN, and then all the way through the other stops, Turner, CBS, and now Fox, I probably have averaged being gone for 70 events a year, maybe 75, and you add two more days to travel out and to travel back, and then you do the math, and, you know, I've probably spent somewhere in the neighborhood of 55% of my time at home and about 45% of my time on the road throughout the entire marriage. Separation on purpose can make for a nice, long, and enduring marriage.
But you've got to have a Terry. You've got to have a Miss Terry. And one of the things that I always admired about you, Tim, is that you never moved to Bristol. You never moved to Atlanta because the airport's there. You never moved to New York City. You stayed right there in Shreveport. Why?
Well, I actually did move to Bristol because that was a career move I had to make when I left Baton Rouge. So in that period when we started game day in 1987, I moved up there about the same week John Saunders did from Baltimore. And I did SportsCenter during that period for about 3 years. Between 87 and, in fact, those were the only years you didn't see me doing anything for Jefferson Pilot and Raycom because I was an exclusive staffer at ESPN. But when I renegotiated the contract after 3 years there in 1990, that's when I moved home. And that was a strong commitment that I made at the time. And my mentor, Kurt Gowdy, told me at that time, he said, you need to, you know, Tim, this is, if you get this deal and they allow you to move back home, then you're sending a message to the entire business that this is a guy that wants to be a long-term guy in the business, but is not going to jeopardize his personal life for his professional life. And I did do that. And I never moved to Atlanta when I went to Turner. I never moved to New York when I went to CBS. Nor did I go to L.A. where Fox is located, and I was never going to do that. I put my wife where she would be most comfortable, and the reason we didn't go back to Baton Rouge was because her mother was still alive and not in the best of health, and her mother was here in Shreveport, so she wanted to be with her mom as much as she could, and you know, that was what I did. And Gowdy's point was, Kurt's point was, Tim, put your wife where she's happy at home, because she's the one that's really going to live there. And the more successful you become, the more you're going to be gone. And she needs to be happy when you're gone. So do that for her, and it'll pay dividends. And it did. If we had stayed in Connecticut, I'm here to tell you, we would have never made it. Because the lifestyle up there, and, you know, not so much the job was great, and our friends were great, people that we worked with, but we're Southerners, and we wanted to have friends that had nothing to do with the television business. We wanted to have a social life in a neighborhood where we, you know, we felt comfortable, and people that didn't know or care that I did this for a living could be friends of ours. And that's just the kind of the lifestyle that I think most people born in the South have. And in the Northeast, we just didn't have that. And I'd say she wasn't happy there, but I wasn't either, you know. And so when the contract came up, I was able to go to my bosses there at the time and say, look, you know, my wife and I, we're just not going to make it. She can't stand it. And the truth of the matter was, I couldn't stand it either. I didn't like living there any more than she did. But I used her, you know, as my means to be able to get a new contract, stay with them as a company, but not have to live up there.
Tim, I was talking to the late, great Jack Buck. And man, what an announcer. But I asked him the same thing, not about moving. I just said, what advice would you give to a young broadcaster? At the time, I was fairly young, not that young. He gave me a two-word answer: be nice.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to that. And it does, you can back me up. Does that spell Jack Buck?
Yeah, it does. That and just flat out funny. I mean, he was a funny guy. And I knew Jack, obviously, a long time before I knew his son, Joe. And I could say, in the time that I was with Joe, when he was with us at Fox, I saw him a few times at seminars and on the road on occasion, but never, you know, a lot. But Joe's persona is very similar to his dad's, and I think it's served him well in his career. His dad, though, was absolutely an incredibly funny guy. You know, I've been told by some people that've seen me in public speaking engagements in Alabama and a few other places, oh, Tim, we just love you. You're so funny. And I'd like to think I'm a good storyteller, but Jack Buck would have you bending over laughing. I mean, as an MC in St. Louis, no one wanted to be a keynote speaker when Jack Buck was the MC because he was so funny. I mean, he was that good. And, Gowdy, who, by the way, as I said, was my mentor, and I'm about to go to his alma mater and the Seva State Park. It's named after him outside Laramie, Wyoming, this week because we've got the Fly in the Ointment Championship of the regular season on Saturday night on Fox. Spencer and I have Wyoming hosting undefeated Fresno State, and Fresno State, to me, is capable of being a top 10 team and certainly could be this year's Tulane as the best you know, a group of five team in the country. And so I'm thrilled to be going up to Kurt's place because from the time I met him in 1982 until the time he died, years and years later, he counseled me and really took me under his wing. But Kurt would tell you in a heartbeat that Jack Buck was one of the funniest men he ever knew. He just was. Once I could tell you stories about going to the bathroom at Busch Stadium with Ernie Sr. And we had just gotten our rings, our World Series rings in 1996. And some of the lines that Jack Buck had for us as we were going up to the public toilet as he was checking out our rings, it was hilarious. I mean, you can just visualize what he might be saying, yep. You know, looking over at the porcelain convenience as though he's checking you out and saying, oh, nice ring.
Nice ring. That's great. Hey, Tim, that is a great story. Tim, when we get back, let's talk a little football, although I've really enjoyed this. We'll continue with Tim Brando, Fox Sports on Big Noon Sports.
Built to win.
Ball game, Alabama wins.
Built for championships.
Heading for the pylon. Get the race. Wins the race. Touchdown, Alabama.
Built by like Bama. The Crimson Tide play here. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide take on Texas A&M at Kyle Field. Our coverage begins at 11:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner too.
It's back. Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com. Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Matt Lars, our producer extraordinaire, is Justin Jones. And our special guest is Tim Brando.
Tim, before we get into talking about Alabama, from a big picture perspective, we're almost a little bit more, I think, than a third of the way through the season. A couple takeaways, biggest surprises, biggest disappointments, just the floor is yours.
Well, the number one story remains Colorado and Deion Sanders, despite the two losses most recently, and especially I think the USC game, which really tells you how this program that Deion built is revitalized. I mean, they were on the precipice of a second straight blowout loss, and they rallied and made USC's defense, which appeared to be improved. I had them twice. They outmanned Stanford. I thought Arizona State was a more talented defensive team, but even Arizona State had some success against them offensively in the game we had a couple of weeks ago out in the desert. But I thought that USC would handle Colorado similarly to the way Oregon did, and they didn't. So they exposed USC's defense for not being ready for prime time, for not being ready to be a team that, in my opinion, a legitimate contender for the college football playoff. USC won the game, but I think that their image took a serious hit in terms of just how viable a team they are to win it all. And Caleb Williams came back to win it all. I don't think they can do that with that defense in the current shape that it's in. And they don't have Travis Hunter, and they're going to get him back eventually. And to do that without him, I thought, sold volume. And there's an article, in fact, a new one just posted a short time ago at FoxNews.com. Another writer took some of what I said yesterday on Outkick about Deion's success and how today's media being opinion-based almost exclusively now in sports opinion base has totally screwed up, the impact and the influence of what Sanders and Colorado have done. They have, rather than seeing what's historically happening to change the landscape of college football through Deion Sanders' approach using the transfer portal exclusively, they have almost forgotten that and decided to further polarize college football, much as the country has been polarized politically, by saying they're Black America's team. That is appealing to the lowest, I mean the lowest, common denominator. There's so much more to this story and so much more substance to what Deion's done. For that to be sort of brushed aside so that we can pontificate political propaganda like calling it a Black America's team is just a joke, an absolute joke. And at some point, somebody in the media has got to stand up and say it. And so I'm that guy, and I'll get on the mountaintop and cry about it as much as as loud as I can. I'll cry out that our media is screwing it up, and it's wrong. Beyond that story, which I still think is the top story of the season to this point, the Pac-12 is the best conference in America. In a year when they are dying, literally a three-month death march through Thanksgiving, they're the best conference in America, top to bottom. And I'm not even getting much pushback from the most ardent of SEC fans that that's not, in fact, the case, which should tell you that real, you know, football fans know what they're seeing. And the league has the best quarterback. It has some teams that are really looking like they're complete. On both sides of the ball. Urban Meyer pointed out last week, and I agree with him, there was a time when you looked at the Pac-12 and you said, okay, they got really good quarterbacks, really good skilled people, but the line of scrimmage, those guys are getting blown up. When they play against teams from the SEC or teams from the Big Ten, they're going to get rooted out because they don't have anyone that can pass protect or run block. That's not the case now. If you watch Oregon State last week against Utah, those are two tough, top-notch defenses, particularly against the run, and they threw up a rock fight, you know, for 3.5 hours that Spencer and I had. The game was not aesthetically that much fun to watch for at least the first 2.5 quarters, but the defenses really were the difference in the game. It wasn't just about quarterbacks or big plays being made by skilled position players. And then when you take into account all the depth of talent at places like Oregon, with Bo Nix doing what he's doing, and he's a legitimate Heisman candidate, to go along with Uiagalelei, who is getting a second opportunity after leaving Clemson, he's been a little bit slower to come around, but with the defense and with his ability to run the football, he's getting a really good time to showcase himself. And even the teams with a loss, like UCLA, he's got a brand-new quarterback, but a kid that's a phenom, Dante Moore, he was exposed in the Utah game, but that kid's great. They're so good that I'm going to see them again next week. Spencer and I are going to do two games. We're going to see West Virginia and Houston on Thursday night next week, and then we're going to fly from Houston out to Corvallis again to see Chip Kelly's Bruins. Of UCLA play Oregon State. So all those teams are alive. The teams with one loss even that are not undefeated, the ones that aren't ranked in the top 10, are still very much alive to win that league. And they may cannibalize at the end of the year, and they may not get a team in the Final Four of college football because they do cannibalize each other. But right now, top to bottom, they're the best league. Most disappointment, I think, probably would have to be, without question, teams like Clemson, like LSU, that we all thought would be vying for a position to be in the college football playoff and aren't. And I would lump Alabama in there had they lost one other game, and they almost did. So they're fortunate to be a team with one loss, or they could be called one of the more disappointing teams. The SEC in general, has been disappointing. I don't even think Georgia is worthy of being number one. If they weren't the two-time defending champion, they wouldn't be number one. They wouldn't be higher than sixth or seventh if they weren't the two-time defending champion. They just took on an Auburn team that I think we all know is still on the learning curve and is very limited offensively and almost lost. And if they didn't have a tight end, they wouldn't have a playmaker. They certainly don't seem to have one at wide out. Carson Beck is not as good as the quarterback that was an original walk-on that led them to two titles. They could get exposed very quickly, sooner than Georgia fans would like to think. And I think the Big 12 has also been disappointing. I thought TCU would be better. I thought K-State would be better. I thought Baylor would be better. Now, they're waiting in the wings to take on half of those teams leaving the Pac-12, so happiness is in their future. But other than Texas and maybe OU, we'll find out more this week with the Red River Rivalry weekend in front of us, which is more of a celebration weekend for the SEC than it is a goodbye for the Big 12. It's interesting. I think the Big 12 outlook is bright for the future, despite the fact their two best teams are headed to the SEC. And I think in a lot of ways that really summarizes where college football is now, that we're in such transition that the two teams that are undefeated in the Big 12 are going to be really playing essentially an SEC game on Fox this weekend.
Tim, it's always a pleasure, other than listening and watching you on television on Thursdays and Saturdays. Do you do a lot of – I know you do a lot of Twitter. Tell everybody where they can follow you. Or excuse me, it's X.
Brando on Twitter, on X. Yeah, and by the way, I'll leave you with a parting shot. Alabama's in trouble, in my opinion, this weekend. They're in trouble at A&M. Believe that.
I don't think you're the only one.
I can't
I think
disagree with that.
Yeah,
they're in trouble.
Believe it or not, you got two.
A&M's got the athletes to win that game at home. Yep. They do.
Yep. They certainly have them up front, and they got a great secondary too. Tim, have safe travels. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You bet, Matt. Thanks, Lars. Good to be with you.
All right. Good stuff. You always get good stuff with Tim Brando. Same will be true for our next guest, who's the president of the Talladega Super Speedway. He will wrap up another Yellowwood 500 fantastic weekend when we continue on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
The Unified 100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
A very warm afternoon. The sky mostly sunny. The high at 89. Clear tonight. The low 61. And the weather stays warm and dry tomorrow and Thursday. A good supply of sunshine both days. Highs between 86 and 89 degrees. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at laura.lee@thebamabroker.com. That's laura.lee@thebamabroker.com.
It's 86 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Big Noon Sports brought to you by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage, and also Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker, Advantage Realty Group. We thank them and their organizations for their support of the show. By the way, if you're interested in supporting the show, we can always get your business some airtime. So you can get in touch with Tide 100.9 and they will direct you to us. And you can also think our website's still rolling along at BigNoonSports.com and Twitter at Big Noon Sports. Okay, still waiting to get in touch with Talladega, and we will continue to try that as well. But in the meantime, I flipped over and watched a little Monday Night Football. I really like watching the Mannings. I just think they give a very interesting perspective, and they were needed last night because that was a really bad game. The Seahawks defeat the Giants 24-3, and I don't know, I got a pretty good memory, but I'm just not real sure that the Big Apple has had two worst teams in the NFL in recent memory anyway. The Giants and the Jets are awful, although the Jets at least put up their dukes this past weekend. But the NFL, as far as big name, big time, undefeated teams, you got the Eagles and you got the 49ers, both in the NFC. The Eagles, of course, are led by Jalen Hurts. But San Francisco and Philadelphia are both 4-0. Four games into the season, everybody has at least one loss except for Philadelphia and the San Francisco 49ers. So there are some quick notes from the NFL other than talking about Kelce and the Swifties. Man, Justin, have you been keeping up? I mean, the NFL is growing leaps and bounds based on the popularity of a country music singer. It's fantastic, isn't it?
I think it is fantastic. As much as people think it's annoying, it's bringing new fans, new eyes to the game, and that's always good to grow the audience as well as the people that enjoy football.
You know, when it first started and it was rumored that they were dating, you know, you could kind of see this coming. And I thought, man, Matt, you're really going to be annoyed by that. But to everyone's surprise, the guy that keeps kids off his front yard, I like it. I mean, I don't know that it's going to immediately go out and make me buy a Taylor Swift shirt or a CD or even a Kelce jersey. But they sell out of them. Did you hear this? I heard, and I don't even know where I pick stuff like this up. I drive a lot, and I flip around and listen to different sports shows and news shows. But I heard that Taylor had on some kind of shorts. Are you walking with me on this? She had on some kind of designer shorts, and I guess somebody looked it up online and said that they were $500 for a pair of shorts. I don't collectively, and my wardrobe is probably not worth $500. No, that's not true. I've got a couple of really, really nice suits. But shorts that cost $500 are for people like Taylor Swift. But the fans of Taylor Swift, the Kansas City Chiefs, and Kelce went out and bought them all. There are none left. So are you consumed by this situation enough, Justin, to go buy a $500 pair of shorts?
I'm not even close to being that consumed with this situation. Man, that's just ridiculous. And I think the first game when all of this hype and drama started as well, I think Kelce was wearing like this matching denim situation, I think, like a jacket, jeans, and they had these designs on them. And I think those also sold out. I think they were worth like around $1,000 as a set. I'll stick to my Target shorts, my flip-flops, and a T-shirt.
That's one of the benefits of working a lot of radio, as opposed to days in TV, where you spend a little money on ties and coats.
But just the top half, right? Just the top half.
Everybody laughs at this, but my last day at 13, I stood up because I was wearing a suit coat, great white shirt, you know, a really good-looking tie, shorts and flip-flops. And that, back in that day, quite honestly, I am a really good perspirer, and those lights would get really, really hot back in those days. And so I did it for a couple of reasons, for comfort, and also did it just to try and stay cool so I didn't flop sweat. But, yeah, waist down, no problem. And you know what? I may be one of the few that's admitted it, but there's a lot of people doing that, even today. But today, the lights are room temperature, whatever it is. You don't have to worry about them creating heat. Back in the day, you did. Okay, Justin, leading out. Never got your opinion. What would Justin Jones, as the czar of college football and basketball, do to stop fans from storming fields and courts?
I think the only answer is more security and more fencing. I think if you look at Bryant Denny, they have the fence that kind of goes around, and those gates are very well, I guess, guarded by security officials. Because you and Lars hit the nail on the head. It is fun and exciting when you see it happened or if you're a part of it, but the risk is so much greater for injuries, for fans, safety of coaches, safety of players. I think you might just need to get more, I don't know, and security personnel. And what I say that, but then, Matt, we talked yesterday about the one security guard that was doing his best to keep people off the field, but to no success. So,
And he kind of went overboard. He was overwhelmed, but there's no reason to elbow what looked like a co-ed kind of in the head, kind of in the shoulder. It sure as heck knocked her down.
I mean, clearly he wasn't going to stop the number of fans. So I don't want to say at that point give up, but you kind of have to.
Well, just I read somewhere where somebody said, and it was just probably an X feed. Hey, how about that? I used X before I said Twitter, but now, of course, I said Twitter anyway. That when you fine... The SEC fines, and they're going to fine Ole Miss $100,000. Would it motivate teams not to do this if the fine went directly to the other team?
You mean like if Ole Miss stormed the field?
Ole Miss now owns LSU $100,000.
I could see that being a difference maker, because I know Tennessee wouldn't want to pay us $100,000. I mean, they were asking for donations for their goalpost after the fact, so I'm sure they don't like the fine as it is now, and they definitely wouldn't like it going directly to the other team.
Our many thanks to Nick Kelly and to Tim Brando. We appreciate their contributions to the show. Matt, Lars, Justin, we'll be back in 22 hours. Have a blessed day.